Could you?
Yes, Carol.
In looking at number three, where does the board fit in? I would love to be, I'm glad that we're going through the auditor, police chief, everybody else, but at what point is the board informed so, you know, before things get moved?
On number three?
Yeah.
Number three.
So we never get a chance?
No, number three, under number three, number three.
Got it, okay.
You mean the board of directors, Carol?
Mm-hmm.
Park board?
Yes.
Okay. Because there's also a citizen review board, sorry, so there's.
One of the.
Talking two boards.
Actually.
Yeah.
All of the, you know, I just feel like at some point, because if everybody's not kept, somebody's left out of the loop, that becomes the big problem, and I just wanted to make sure that we.
There's a way that, on individual matters of discipline, that you can get all the way to the board of directors in this hybrid model. And also in number three.
In number two model, what are you talking about?
No, well, two, well, actually now, they've switched around a little bit.
Okay.
So one is now the hybrid.
Two is still number two.
Number two is still number two, and number three is still number three.
Okay.
So in three and the hybrid, there is a way that a discipline appeal can get all the way to the BART board of directors. It's got to go through a few steps to get to there. And I think in all of the models we've discussed, there is at least yearly, but potentially more frequent, pretty comprehensive reporting that's going to come out of this police review model. So the BART board is going to understand how many cases were reviewed, you know, how many of those cases the recommendations for discipline were followed by the police chief, you know, and how many cases they were appealed, what the outcome of those appeals are, etc. So not names, you know, not individual cases, but they're going to get a history of how cases were handled. So we as the board will begin to understand how, hopefully, through statistics, and maybe even through some narratives or recommendations, how the civilian review body, the chief, and the investigator, how those three are interacting. So that's the involvement of the board as we've seen it to date. There's some questions have been thrown out, and I've sort of parked those for the time being. But, you know, one is the role of the BART board in hiring the auditor. I think in all of these models, we presume that the auditor is an employee, in essence, of the BART board, so like the general manager or the controller treasurer or others. And also, presumably, the BART board is the appointing authority for the citizen committee. And we have not discussed in any detail, you know, how people get on there, can they be removed, are they there for terms, what happens there. So those are the roles for the board of directors so far that we've discussed. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. What threw me off was when we were talking with Chief Jesus, we were talking about that second model.
Yeah.
And then I do see it in the third model. Uh-huh. And then back to the number of, you know, citizens we put on there, I think that's a real crucial thing for board members because, you know, I just knowing us having one person, and it, you know, you don't want to have too many people, but ultimately I think the problem is I would like to have two. I mean, you know, so that means now we have 18 members. So, you know, just trying to see how many we're having and why. That, of course, that has to be a discussion ultimately with the board itself and everything. I think that's a significant piece.
All right. Sir.
Yes, just a quick question and clarification. The chief mentioned internal affairs. Will internal affairs be part of this component
in
this process?
As I understand it, internal affairs continues to exist. They'll investigate most cases. What we've said is that in the cases specified, and I think this is the same with all of them, but abuse of power, racial profiling, sexual orientation, bias, sexual harassment, use of deadly force, suspicious and wrongful deaths. There will always be an investigation by the auditor for any of those instances. But we've also said that should IA and the police chief decide to do an investigation, that they can also do a parallel investigation of those things. But those will always be investigated by this body. And then IA will continue to investigate all of the other allegations of misconduct as well. Yeah. Dr. Kelly.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. I have come this morning because I was interested in the conversations. I've been getting the emails about the models and have appreciated the latest effort by Reggie in trying to formulate some consensus. I want to comment on Reverend Buford's comments in the very beginning. It is important to me, and I think the board, that whatever we do does restore some confidence in the community, and I appreciate your comments about making sure that we keep that in our focal point, because to go through this process and not accomplish anything that the community is confident about is a waste of time and money, in all honesty. And to Jesse, I wanted to say, look, the times have changed. I personally think this is not an expression of where the board may be. I think there is a role in the disciplinary process as we move forward. It will be rare, it will be uncommon, and it will be used with some, if the board ultimately adopts a model that makes some sense, it'll be the exception rather than the rule. But I think the association and your members have to at least consider the possibility on these types of matters, the types of matters that have been identified by this committee, there may be a role for the board of directors ultimately in the disciplinary process. And to Don, I want to say, what we do may be screwy. It may not be the same as what was done in Richmond or Sacramento or anywhere else, but I would hope that we can get it right and get it so it makes sense for us. And while I agree with you, we want to put in place immediately what makes the most sense. It potentially has the ability to evolve because none of us have the wisdom to get it right the first time, and we want to at least leave that door open. And to Reggie, I would just want to say thanks. You did a lot of hard work, and I'm about to hand out an alternative to your model, which includes many of the principles that you've put forth. But I couldn't have come to that without your foundation and your ideas. So let me hand that out to the board, and I'll give you and everyone. I have one for everyone. I hope. How many are sitting up here? Seven, two, four, six, seven, three.
I can make copies for you.
Okay. If I run out. Mm-hmm. And also, I should say that I want to thank Marcia Devine for her help in putting putting this together. And again, this is intended as an opportunity to formulate a consensus that perhaps all the divergent points of view can agree with. I'll give one to everyone, to Quint. Everyone else in the audience will get a copy of this.
Greg?
Yes.
Do you have a BlackBerry or a computer with you?
My BlackBerry.
Let me have, as Joel said, Marcia had typed up his comments. I can forward an email copy of this to you if that would be helpful.
Yeah, I can look at it while we're talking.
And is it your BART address?
Yes.
Okay.
So I'll give you all an opportunity to read it, but essentially it does draw on Reggie's outline. It does provide a pathway for appeals to the board of directors, should that become necessary. And it does look at the time of this issue. Anyone who's done investigations, I suspect Don and Reggie will agree with me, that any layer of review draws out the process longer and longer. And while there is a legal requirement for 365 days, stretching it out to 365 days undermines the entire intent of what this process should be about. It should happen quickly, and it should happen as effectively as possible. So I do give, there is an off-ramp from this process that puts it back under the authority of the chief of police if these matters become delayed and deadlocked and they can't proceed. One of the things that we heard from the presentations that were made was that in San Francisco, these things are delayed a long time, and that they're tied up. That's not fair to the officer. It's not fair to the person who complains. It's not fair to the community. So there has to be an off-ramp, in my opinion, that allows it to go back into the normal process in the event that there isn't a satisfactory conclusion. So I just submit it to all of you. I'll give you a chance to read it, and hopefully it provides some foundation or some way to arrive at a consensus. I can tell you that since I'm the author of this, I am prepared to support this at the board of directors and speak in support of it and ask my fellow directors to vote for it. So,
Jones, may I make a suggestion?
Yes, Dorothy?
Yes, Greg.
I'm sorry, if he has a chance, I don't know how long it is, just so I can hear it before it comes on, could he at least, because I'm sure it'll be a chance, could Joel just go over the highlights of what's the first step, if there is an appeal, and who's the final arbiter. So I just get a flavor before it comes over to BlackBerry. White guys, maybe describe it out loud while you're all reading it.
Or maybe, Greg, I don't know if this is what you're asking for, which is I thought Reggie did a pretty good job of summarizing his model.
Yeah,
if you'd just like to spend a little bit of time talking about yours differs from what Reggie proposed, what?
Okay. Yeah. I'd be happy to do that. Carol asked me to do the same thing as the question was being asked. In item one, it's essentially is this. I've changed some words rather than use the word private. Private is not a very constructive word. Not that Reggie's intent wasn't constructive, but I've changed wherever private was, it would be a confidential personnel meeting, which is really what it is. It takes it outside of the making it look like we're trying to deceive the public. So in number one, let me just read it.
Yeah.
I'll go slow and try to emphasize where there are differences. The police auditor shall investigate all complaints of allegations of police officer misconduct regarding abuse of power, racial profiling, sexual orientation bias, sexual harassment, and the use of deadly force, suspicious and wrongful deaths. I think that was Reggie's consensus of what's there. Those are the most serious, egregious offenses, and they should stand out differently than any other type of alleged police misconduct. The independent investigative findings made by the Office of Police Auditor shall include recommendations for corrective action up to and including termination where warranted, and when the evidence does not support the allegations of misconduct, the auditor shall recommend that the matter be dismissed. The reason I've added that is I think anyone who's done investigations of police misconduct or peace officer misconduct know that many of them end up being dismissed because you either cannot sustain the matter, not that it didn't happen, but you don't have enough evidence to sustain it, or it just simply didn't happen. So I don't want, from my personal point of view, I don't want it to look like to the police officers that all we're looking at is all the bad stuff. This process could actually take a black cloud away from the head of a police officer who's been alleged of misconduct that they may or may not have engaged in. The auditor shall recommend that, in a confidential personnel meeting, the auditor shall submit his or her investigative findings or recommendations to the citizen board for review. Should a citizen or board agree with the findings or recommendations, the report will be submitted to the chief of police for appropriate action. The chief of police shall implement the recommended action. Should the chief of police, this is number two, should the chief of police disagree with the findings or recommendation of the auditor and citizen board, the chief of police in a confidential personnel meeting may appeal to the general manager. The chief of police will submit his or her disagreements and recommendations to the general manager. In a confidential personnel meeting, the general manager shall make a decision and make his or her decision known to the chief of police, citizen board, and auditor. The chief of police shall implement the general manager's decision. Should the citizen board disagree, and I think that's very similar to what Reggie has proposed, should the citizen board disagree with the auditor's findings by simple majority in a confidential personnel meeting, the auditor and civilian board shall attempt to come to a consensus. If the citizen board and auditor fail to come to a consensus by simple majority, the citizen board may appeal. The efforts made to achieve consensus shall be documented by the citizen board and shall be forwarded to the chief of police as part of appeal. All appeals regarding findings and recommendation for corrective action or dismissal between the citizen board and auditor will be initially appealed to the chief of police in a confidential personnel meeting. The citizen board will submit their disagreements and recommendations to the chief of police in a confidential personnel meeting. The auditor will submit his or her recommendation to the chief of police in a confidential personnel meeting. The chief of police shall make a decision on the matter and make his decision known to the citizen board and auditor in a confidential personnel meeting. The chief of police shall implement discipline or dismissal. So that gives us a roadmap to where they disagree and there's off ramps if the chief doesn't agree with it. If the citizens committee disagrees with the chief of police's decision, and it is reflected by a simple majority of its members, there may be an appeal to the general counsel, general manager, in a confidential personnel meeting. The citizen board and the auditor's recommendation will be submitted to the general manager in a confidential personnel meeting. The general manager will render a finding and report it to the chief of police, and Citizens Board in a confidential personnel meeting, the chief of police shall implement the general manager's decision. Okay, so now we have disagreements resolved. The general manager has made a decision. What if no one agrees with that? Or no? What if the citizen board? If the citizen board disagrees with the general manager with a supermajority, a two-thirds majority, they may appeal the matter to the BART Board of Directors. All reports will be submitted to the BART Board of Directors, who will render a decision in a closed session. All of the BART Board of Directors' decisions will require a two-thirds majority of the BART Board of Directors for approval. In a confidential personnel session, the BART Board will notify the Citizen Board, General Manager, and Chief of Police. The Chief of Police will implement the decision of the Board of Directors, which will be final. And a couple more. At least monthly, the Citizen Board shall receive reports from the police auditor on the number of types of cases filed, number of open cases, the disposition of any action taken on the cases, recommendations for corrective action, including dismissing discipline and dismissals, the number of independent investigations completed by the Office of Independent Auditor, and the number of cases being appealed either to the Chief Office of Police Auditor by citizens, or in the case of disagreements between the Chief of Police and the Auditor. Appeals Citizen Board to the General Manager, or Citizen Board to the BART Board of Directors. For tracking purposes and to ensure timeliness, this report shall include the number of days that have elapsed between the date of complaint and the report to the Citizens Review Board. That's my language, not Reggie. It's an amendment to what he did. And at the end, I've added a question about timeliness, and the reason I thought it was important that that be included up here is so that we can track the timeliness of these matters. 7 is the auditor shall have unfettered access to police reports and personnel records and shall comply with all confidentiality requirements of the department, the district, and state law. It's a little different than what Reggie did. It requires that they comply with more of the rules that affect these things. During an investigation, all involved sworn personnel shall be compelled to meet and cooperate with the auditor in accordance with Government Code 3300 to 3313. That's the totality of the Peace Officer Bill of Rights, or procedural bill of rights for law enforcement. The auditor shall be notified immediately by the officer in charge of the scene to respond to the investigative scene regarding an officer-involved shooting resulting in the death or injury to a citizen or a peace officer. And I believe that was the piece that was brought to us by Don, saying that his experience is that this extra set of eyes and ears at these scenes make a big difference, and I think that's a good and important part of this. The thing that's new that wasn't in Reggie's is his last part, and I've entitled it Timeliness. Nothing in this section is intended to delay or interfere with the timely investigation and disposition of internal affairs investigation of alleged police conduct. Should the internal auditor or citizens board fail to conclude their citizen oversight responsibilities within 120 days, the matter will be turned over to the chief of police for an expeditious resolution of the disciplinary process. So it's an effort to try to bring everybody together. If I've made you all angry or you all disagree with something, I've accomplished my task. I'm happy to answer any questions.
I actually had a question. I actually agree with something you said earlier, which is not a first, but
close.
Does happen? No, not at all. But I have a few questions actually for Reggie, and I think Joel, and I can jump in and discuss yours. But I really appreciate you bringing this forward and in the details you've done. But the first was, I think, where our model is different from Berkeley, and I wanted to sort of circle back to that. As we've talked about it, and both the one, Joel, that you brought forward and the one that Reggie did, we've said that it's not the Citizen Review Board that's really the investigatory authority. In our model that's kind of cooking here, it is the professional auditor or investigator that does the investigations. And subpoena power, for example, at Berkeley, and there's a big difference. In Berkeley, the Citizen Review Board can subpoena officers and compel their cooperation. We haven't discussed that as a power for the Civilian Review Board, but we've said that the investigator would do it.
No, we said that the officers are compelled to cooperate
with the investigator.
So that's equivalent to a subpoena. Yeah.
So is it
so I mean, in that way, I think ours is a little bit more like the investigator or the auditor model than it is like other civilian review models. And I wonder if that will affect timeliness. You know, the idea that a citizen board, you know, would have to schedule these meetings. They're doing a lot of investigatory work. They're hearing a lot of testimony versus if you have a citizen board that is typically then reviewing files and recommendations that have been completed by the auditor. So I think that might address the timeliness issue. We've still talked about a role for the citizen board, but it's a different role. So we've said, yes, you can recommend discipline, which the Berkeley citizen board doesn't do. But unlike the Berkeley board or even San Francisco board, we're not talking about the citizen board as the investigatory authority. So if I understand it correctly, I think that's a way in which ours is different. And so again, we've talked about hybrid models, but it is different. You're having the professional staff doing the investigation. Secondly, I just wanted to make a comment, which is, and I think Joel said it as well, the thing I liked about Reggie's model is that there was an effort to say, all right, well, let's, you know, solve as many discipline problems as we can at the level of sort of investigator and chief and citizen board, right? But I think, I think Joel, you might feel similarly. I think any model which just is entirely within the BART bureaucracy, and there's no recourse, there's no appeal, there's no strong disciplinary role for either BART board at the end of the day or the citizen committee is not going to feel legitimate. And you know, listening to the public testimony at these meetings, there was a lot of talk of the San Francisco model. I don't know that everyone knew all the San Francisco model and all its nuts and bolts, but that testimony, and I think the Contra Costa Times editorial and others really said, look, at some point, BART board citizen review panel have to be empowered in the area of discipline. And I think, like Director Keller, I hope a lot of things will, you know, kind of never get to the point where the BART board is overruling or returning recommendations. I hope that the other parts of the system are working well. And I think if the BART board is getting a lot of those appeals, we'll know that something's wrong with the system. But I think a system where that can never happen, it's all in the BART bureaucracy, just isn't going to feel legitimate. We can't take that forward. And so there's got to be a way for matters to get out. Another thought on discipline itself, discipline in the current setup is very prescribed by contract language. So the disciplinary options that the chief has, citizen board has, the investigator has, are currently very limited. And that's something we're going to have to figure out, I think, through negotiations. But there's ways in which that can be made understood. So, you know, I've been talking with other folks about discipline schedule. So if as a matter of policy, the department says, all right, here's how we'd like to handle discipline. You know, so these are the areas of misconduct, and typically, you know, misconduct of this sort will have this sort of discipline. You know, you lay that out. You might want to say there's other considerations. You know, look at your record, look at if this is a second or third attempt or whatever. But I think a lot of the potential disagreements about discipline can be headed off if there's a discussion on the front end about what appropriate discipline is for different types of misconduct. And there's ways we can make this system work. So again, we can sort of do work up front so we get very few appeals, where we get very few disagreements. Because in that instance, you know, the chief can then go back to the citizen board, who might be unhappy about the discipline in this or that instance, but be able to say, look, as a matter, you know, we had this discussion, you know, at the beginning of the year where I laid out a discipline schedule. We talked through, you know, why I recommend these sorts of discipline in this range for these types of misconduct. This is, you know, in keeping with our policy, you know, which you've endorsed or you have comments on and incorporated. So, you know, again, I think there's ways we can make sure that that there's not a lot of appeals either to the GM or to the board. But to that, I think, you know, Reggie's model is workable. Looking at Joel's model, the main difference I see here is the supermajority voting.
And the timeliness.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
timeliness is...
Timeliness
is fine if that's realistic, you know, because we've also, as long as it can, you know, you realize these things might happen a month, and there's enough time for review to schedule the meetings and so on. I don't know if 120 days is the right answer.
I just made up the number so that we can...
It might be 160 days, it might be 90 days. I'm not sure, but I just want to make sure we take a hypothetical case and say let's give a reasonable amount of time to deal with scheduling and so on, and workload, and make sure that justice isn't done. I always think about printing, and you know, when you go to have something printed, you're told by the printer it can be fast, it can be cheap, or it can be good. Choose any two. I don't want to say, all right, well, we have a process which is fast, but it could actually be not very good. So just want to make sure that we balance timeliness with thoroughness. And I think, so setting a time limit's good. I'm not sure that this is the one. I just get heartburned about supermajority voting. I think the state of California has been kind of ruined by supermajority voting. And I don't know, you know, why a supermajority is deemed necessary. But other than that, I think this looks pretty reasonable. It's very close to,
very
in
close.
Many ways, what Jesse had put forward. Yeah, so those are my comments and questions.
Thank you for reworking, I guess, while you were sitting in the back of the room there. What Reggie was saying.
I just read his mind.
You're really good, man. You do it that quick. I want to appreciate the fact that you did it. I don't think it violates the spirit of what Mr. Lyles, I think,
not
was trying to put through, or the spirit of the collective conversations that led up to his synthesis of it. A couple of comments I would make. I really don't see any problem with it. I think, as has been stated, whatever happens is going to get modified by the material circumstances that we find ourselves in once you do have the process. And as Chief G says, that once people know that there is a process, there probably will be a spike because people want to see if it is or is it ain't,
right.
As some people might say, is it real or is it not? And then based on that, I think that the number of complaints will probably go down. But I think that once again, the main point is that on the one hand, you know, I understand the tendency to want to protect people who are in your employ or rank and file or that you're representing. But on the other hand, I think that really we would like to see if you got 95% purity on your police force, we'd like to see that other 5% out and you get to some state of purity. And it messes with people when you're trying to protect the 5% or that little small percent that's the rotten eggs that are bad. And then it kind of makes the other thing suspect. So what this process does, I think, is it gives everyone a fair shake at having some sort of due process that would work. That being the case, I got the question that I had at the beginning of the meeting last week. I posed a question that had to do with an officer-involved incident wherein, say, if Mr. Saikon was going to an A's game and he were not even in plain clothes, just in civilian clothes, and an officer overreacted, say, for instance, as in the case that happened January 1st. We know that the man in uniform is protected, as you talk about here, Government Code 3300, 3313, as well as other barred employee protections, as well as his constitutional rights. It seems like to me in that incident that the civilian, even though he's in the employ of the police, he's not pursuing police work, maybe he got shot trying to put down a fight or something, that the man in uniform is going to have more rights than a man not in uniform who is a civilian.
Can I respond?
And last week they said that they were going to get some sort of legal opinion on that, and I just wondered what the status of that opinion was.
I actually researched that.
Okay.
Oh, did
Let me respond without having done any research. Yeah. The Peace Officer Bill of Rights is a fact of life in the state.
Right.
We don't have an authority to override that. Mm-hmm. My thought in working with the original draft that Reggie put together was to try to strengthen that and make it particular to this agency. I mean, that tragedy, I presume you're referring to that tragedy in New York where an officer was killed by friendly fire.
Right.
And let's hope that never happens in the Bay Area. But I certainly, in the effort that I've made, would be open to some language that would address that, because an officer, whether he's wearing a uniform or not, should be respected for what he does as a livelihood, and shouldn't die because he's trying to do the right thing. So I have no quarrel with that. I don't have a proposed solution, but in concept, I agree with what you've said.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no. Just so I'm clear, that you were saying as far as what the victim officer, what his rights would be as far as making the complaint. Or
right,
making
right.
Sure.
See, the reason why I say that, once again, not to belabor it, is because regardless of what you might do, mm-hmm. like maybe you feel a certain loyalty, but maybe you don't feel loyalty to anything.
Yeah.
So then there's citizens' outrage in your behalf. And so that citizen's outrage in your behalf and say, look, this man's rights were violated here. And then, so then this citizen's review panel actually would be working in your behalf.
Correct.
Whether you had a kind of like a support of it or not, correct. Because it happened at, since yeah. you're a citizen, they would be advocating in your behalf. That's what I'm
saying. Yeah, and then from my understanding is, and the chief will know this, but any officer off duty or not can file a complaint with another agency if he feels he's been wronged or treated. That process in there that protects an off-duty officer if he felt he's been wronged. And I think in any critical incident, what we have here is it will be investigated no matter if the off-duty officer doesn't want anything done. An incident which, let's say, he's shot or some sort of major injuries occur, it would be under arms that we have here. It would be investigated, no matter not that officer would be a willing participant.
I guess what the question is not whether or not it be investigated, but if the process of investigation in that the uniform officer has more due process rights to appeal to rather than the citizen.
Reggie, can I ask you a quick question? Excuse me, Jesse. I know in the system that I was aware of, that if you have two or more than one peace officer that are an alleged incident, they may have different rights. Or they may require a different degree of support, or you would assign different representatives with each person. So the deceased officer's family mm-hmm. would have a representative representing their interests,
correct.
Which may be entirely different than the officer who fired the bullet, who would have their representative representing their interests. So you can't have one person. You can't have one person representing the two sides because the interests are different. And that's the way.
That's correct.
Correct. And there was such a case as Director Keller described in Buford in Oakland, where an undercover police officer was killed by his fellow uniformed officers. He was responding in the line of duty, and he was gunned down by his uniformed counterparts. Since then, Oakland has implemented a code system whereby if you're running down looking like yourself or Jesse in pursuit of someone while on duty, that there's a color or a name that you can yell out to approaching officers that signify that you're a non-duty cop, don't shoot me. And that officer was represented not just as a police officer, but also by interest, you know, against the city because of his death.
Thank you.
Well, I'd like to thank both Joel and Reggie for putting together something that looks like we can work with. I, too, have a problem with the two-thirds, but I can live with it. I mean, if that becomes a problem, I like a majority as opposed to a two-thirds, but that's what the board wants to do. That's fine. But I don't want us to lose sight of the fact that this is just a part of what we want our citizens review panel to do. This was just an addendum. If you remember, we have a whole
policy and procedure we kind of agreed upon. So,
this is just one piece of it, and I think that that overall piece needs to be what's brought to this committee so that we can look at what we're going to do.
Everything together?
Everything together, meaning, you know, they're going to go through the noble recommendations. They're going to look at certain other things. But there's a lot that we want a citizens review committee or whatever we're going to call them to do. So this piece, even though it took us a long time to get there, and it's an important piece, it's not all of it. And I'm hoping that we'll be able to put it all together in a way that we can present it back to the community. And I would love to be able to say after today that we have something. Now, the one thing that Director Ward Allen brought up, and it was something that I wanted to bring up today, and that was, how do we constitute this committee? If we have all these rules, I had a feeling you'd have it, if we have everything that we know we want them to do, how many people do we have sitting on it? And I've heard from Director Ward Allen today where she said she wants two. Well, that might happen, but when you think about a workable committee, I don't know if we're looking at
greedy.
I don't think we're looking at having some massive committee.
Well, you get to the rest of us.
In discussions with our consultant, Reggie, last week, we kind of played with some ways to do it. And I'd like to put one way out there this morning. And that is, we do have a very diverse board of directors. So if each member of the board of directors were to select someone from their district to be on the review committee, if we were then to look at this body, these people who have put in their time to put someone on the committee, then to take it a step further and look at the police department and have the police department put someone on the committee, we'd be talking of a committee of 11. It's a workable number, it's an uneven number, and if the persons or persons that the board puts on the committee, if we get everybody to show up, we'll always have a quorum. And I have a feeling if the police department were to be responsible for a person on that committee, as well as the public being responsible for a body on that committee, we've kind of covered all of the constituent bases that I could think of. Now, I'm just putting it out there for discussion.
Let me make a comment if I can. I'm going to have to leave. But I feel like, in large part, I feel pretty satisfied with the process as it's taken place. When I first came in the door, you remember my comments were, do what you want to do, right? You can do whatever you want to do, so do what you want to do. I want to say this as well, though, is that I think that it is important for you, for Bart, to craft what it is that Bart wants to do, okay? And I think I made a statement early on that I'm not here to tell you that there is an ideal model out there, because there's not. What has worked in these other communities has worked in those communities. So, in large part, I feel satisfied that we've gotten to this point. But before we get off into that other discussion, I just want to let you know I have to leave. That's why I have to leave prior to leaving.
Thank you.
I thought you were about to say, and this is how I'd like to see your committee constituted.
No. I'm not there.
I wanted to say just with respect to what you were making as a bridging comment, I agree that this is only one small part of a bigger whole that we've been all working on and contributing. Once again, in the last meeting, I raised the notion that all of this work. Was informed by some original principles that we all identified that we wanted to see this process be. I think that if we're going to talk about what our output is, if today with a few amendments to words this is going to be the output of this, then this output is as a result of that. And I think that if we're going to put out what our product is, that we need to look at what went into, what were the values, what were the things that we were looking at to formulate this thing in this kind of way, so this formulation isn't something that's just completely out of the blue. And once again, even though we looked at a hodgepodge of different models, the values that we agreed to weren't necessarily embodied in any of the models that we were looking at. And so that became, for me, a contract, if you will, on whether or not we would have principal discussions when we made that agreement. So then I'll just say that all of this process, or even all the argument that we've had, to the extent that there's been that, has been as a result of there were some principles that we saw that, you know, at least implicitly we agreed to, even as we were stating our cases.
Carol, did you
want to? Yes, first of all, I didn't want Don Kasmer to leave before I just thanked everybody, because I wanted to tell you, you've done good. You were certainly a welcome addition. I personally enjoyed hearing all of your views. I love it when I don't always I don't always agree, and so many times more, I would say that with all of us, we've agreed. I sat in here and was just listening to everyone, and I said, my God, this is the day that we needed to have this recorded or some kind of way to see something that happened, because I was looking at how 6 months ago where we were, and maybe the good coming out of this is that it gave us a chance to learn and meet each other more and to hear all of the different views and opinions, and to find out that all of the people that we feared and thought were monsters aren't necessarily that. But I thought that that was very good. I certainly appreciate, and I just want to say first to my board members, I really appreciate all of your input. And I have to take 1 minute and start with Reggie, because he was somebody that I've had an opportunity to work with very, very closely, and he's made me look good. If I look bad, that's my own doing. But I just appreciate, because not having, I have to say the police system and department was foreign to me, and so he kind of assisted me, and I've asked him some really dumb questions, and he'll let you know that later, but he was able to assist me very much with that, and I appreciate that. Likewise, I had an opportunity to appreciate the police union coming on, and definitely all of you in the audience, because you have been great influences in terms of what you said, and I just kind of think that the hybrid is coming about because we know how important it is to include the citizens and everyone. I appreciate what model you brought forth so, so much, and I appreciate Joel's input, because we want to make sure that we have, just an input from everybody. So that's what I wanted to say. But what I was looking at, we finally reached this point, and it took longer, but based on not trying to rush a model of any kind that would not be acceptable to the majority of people. I hate that the community was not able to stick around to see how we've built to this point, but that's just how it goes. I also am glad to have heard many of your comments, Chief, and you and I, we had a private conversation, which I think we'll keep to ourselves for now. But I just wanted to make sure that we all had an opportunity to have our input, and I was just sitting back there really feeling good to see that we had an opportunity. Thanks for all the staff's input. Dorothy, thanks for all your input. I didn't say thank you, and I wanted to make sure. But those were just my comments. But to see that we came to this point at this time is very important. I regret that Minister Keith Mohammed isn't here right now, but Keith Mohammed, I appreciate all that you have done. And that doesn't mean that we've ended here, but we do plan to move on. But thank you very much, and I just wanted to say that. We finally reached this point, which I hope we can come to present something to the full group. Thank you very much, Don. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. I don't agree with everything in here, but I think this is something that
and
I think
the association's going to do.
Can I say something while Don's still there?
He's left.
Did Don leave?
Yes.
I'm sorry, yes he did?
Yes, he left.
Okay.
Going off of
he needs to make his
Reggie.
Comment too.
Well, yeah. I'm just going to let Justin finish.
He busted my chops a little bit that, hey, we need to stop seeing our ideologies. But, you know, this is something I can work. We can come to, I think both sides can come to the middle, and this is something that I can
work. It's true leadership. I respect you.
Can I make my comments before the meeting does wind up? That'd be okay.
Until one.
And it's
we're going to one. Where are you going, Greg? We're going to one.
Okay. No. Anyway, you know, I've come to respect him ever since I've met him over the, and I've talked to him and hearing all his comments, you know, about all the different processes, and so I've looked at him a lot and just listened to him how he sees things. You know, when I started on this last couple weeks and even leaving last week's meeting, I have felt that draft number two really is the best that would work here. And I wrote down some of Don's comments earlier that, and I do agree with, where he said they're, quote, were complicated, and he just saw down the line they may be fraught with problems down the line as far as the first draft of the hybrid. So, and I still believe in my heart that number two would be the best. Now, let me just say this. Obviously, I represent 48 police managers, and I'm probably speaking for myself here. I'm going to get out of my comfort zone here a lot, and I'm probably speaking – I may not be speaking for all 48 people, but if they could sit at all these meetings like I've sat at them and sat at the community meetings, they may get out of their comfort zone also. So I don't really have a – as I sit here today, maybe what all 48 of them think, I think several of them will join me in this, but and get out of their comfort zone. But because Don wanted to know, well, what would all of my people I represent think, or just what I would think. So anyway, getting out of my comfort zone and looking at Joel's revised disciplinary process, I made a list down here that things that I'm okay with in getting out of my comfort zone. I'm glad they were included in his hybrid. And the first one was in the item number one. Was that it has a dismissal process right up front should the auditor find, you know, this doesn't need to go forward. And those things can happen, and I think that's a good thing if there's a dismissal process right up front after it's thoroughly looked into. The second one was, confidentiality. Actually, let me go to the dismissal. Well, the supermajority. I think, Director Rodriguez, you were mentioning that. And I think Director Sweet said the same thing, that uncomfortable with, or you're not happy with, if it ended up as a two-thirds majority, or Director Sweet said you could live with it, but not something you prefer. I'm actually glad that something like that was included by Director Keller. I think if there is a time for a two-thirds majority, really get out of my comfort zone here. If there is a time for a two-thirds majority, this would be it, because you're talking about someone's job. And if discipline is going to be looked at and seriously contemplated for an employee, I think the two-thirds majority is the best time to include something like that. And so I think that's a good idea. I like the timeliness suggestion also at the bottom. Things have a tendency to drag on in internal affairs cases. I think that everybody on the committee, especially the citizen group, whenever that is formed, will begin seeing that, how things that the weeks just start drifting by. And I think it's a good idea to have a timeliness factor. I don't know if it's 120 days, 90, 180, but I think that is a very good suggestion to have a timeliness factor in there. If I can offer a suggestion under... and I think this is in Reggie's too, but I actually had this come from a couple members. So they've already been thinking about getting out of their comfort zone. But in item number seven, where it says it talks about confidentiality of all the departments, state, and law. So in discussing that with a few of my members, where it only says the auditor right up front, and I don't have a suggestion how to write this. Maybe somebody can make this note that everyone entitled to anything to do with something that goes forward, everyone shall comply with confidentiality requirements, not just the auditor.
That's a good point.
And I was actually looking over the very, very first draft, which is still our working draft. For some reason, even there, it only says the auditor. So some of the people were, because I sent this to everyone by email, so they had time to look at it. So that's the little, you know, butterflies in their stomach. So they would, I think it's a good suggestion, appreciate. Okay. Not just the auditor, everyone that's involved in the case, with, even if their eyes only look at one page, that they're bound by all the state laws, just like the auditor, as it suggests here. Okay. I think I touched on all my entitlements, confidentiality, the dismissal. In wrapping up my comments, not my preferred way of doing things. I also recognize the seriousness of the incident that happened here at our organization. And for that alone, and that if I, at some point, and I don't know if I'm completely there, but I'm definitely entertaining, the idea of this hybrid model. As an individual, and I will, take it forward to the, everyone I represent, and I do my best to share with all the comments I've heard for every week, and as I'm sure we'll go forward, that it's something that I think is workable.
Okay. So, Greg, let me go over some of the changes you discussed. One was in the first paragraph. Actually, one thing that is different is, and I think it's a useful clarification, that disciplinary action could be up to and including termination. So it's nothing we discussed explicitly, but it is making something more explicit that could be the recommendation of the auditor.
Can I one more thing, and maybe yes. Reggie, you can. I have one other thing I just found it, and maybe Reggie, since you started the change in words, maybe you can share with me where you came up with them. But on our original draft, which we've been working on for well over a month now, and under the draft under the Office of Independent Auditor, where it's under item A of what the items that this person would investigate. Reggie, where did you come up with the, and this is a real general use of words, abuse of power? Because that term is not included in our original draft that we've had in front of us for well over a month now. That's a new term, and then the other one is new. If you compare them side by side, is the term abuse of power, because we've all, I think, as a committee.
What is the term you're comfortable with?
For the last month or so, I think this is fair to say that item A on the original draft, we all gave our thumbs up around those terms for many, many meetings now. So abuse of power. And
what are the terms that you're comfortable with? Because when I was writing this,
yes,
I'm probably meaning what you're meaning. So tell me
I'm not real sure. I'm looking at our original draft A, which we've had in front of us for many, many weeks.
Right.
And I think everybody on the committee said that's a good definition. Those are good working. Or those are good definitions of items that should be looked at.
Let's hear Dorothy. I think Dorothy has found, she may be able to help us here.
What we have been using in all of the models on discipline 1, 2, and 3 and in the draft document that we started with was all citizen investigation of all citizen allegations of misconduct involving unnecessary or excessive force, hate crimes, racial profiling, and allegations of racially abusive treatment.
So I guess instead of excessive force, he put abuse of power.
Yeah.
Because that's the only
thing. I'm trying to say and just use the different words, but we can use the exact nomenclature that you feel the most comfortable with. The one thing that I put in here that I don't think is there is a suspicious and wrongful death. And the auditor ought to be all those kind of investigations.
Just like the original definition that we had in front of us for a while, allegations of unnecessary or excessive force.
That's fine.
I just think that's more clearly defined than, quote, abuse of power.
I can live with that.
This also adds, which we didn't have in the earlier definition, sexual orientation bias, sexual harassment.
I thought I had that in there.
No, you did.
No, you did. It wasn't in our earlier.
Right.
So we want to include that.
Good catch, Greg.
Okay, so Director, you were going to ask me what my other ones were?
I was just going to go through them.
Okay.
So we talked about the two changes, well, actually now three changes in one. So instead of abuse of power, we're saying excessive force or what? Sorry.
Allegations of unnecessary or excessive force.
Unnecessary excessive force. Okay. rather than abuse of power, then we'll then the rest, racial profiling, and those continue. Okay.
It keeps it consistent.
So that was one change, the clarification around up to including termination, the process for dismissal of an allegation upon investigation. Okay, those were the differences. Then in 7, so Greg, we were talking about the auditor will have unfettered access to the police reports and personnel records for their investigation, but because they can discuss this with the citizen committee, these can be appealed to the...
Some of my people actually mentioned don't take this personally, you know, even yourself, the board of directors.
Right, it can go to the GM, to the board, et cetera, so that... How about we say the auditor shall have unfettered access to police reports and personnel records, comma... And all parties shall comply with all confidentiality requirements of the department, the district, and state law. Okay.
That's better. Just so it covers everyone.
Right.
All parties who have access to this information.
Yeah. I'll,
there
or,
you go.
Or, what okay. you, or either way, what you said is fine, too.
Well, you can say all parties that have access to confidential information shall...
Yeah, perfect. Okay. That's perfect.
Okay. Because I wanted to be clear that we've said they can discuss confidential information with whoever these appeal bodies are, but it has to stay confidential.
It has to comply with the law. Good point.
Okay. Okay. So those were the changes to 1 and 7.
Well, we're going to work on changes. Can we also go back on the timeliness and take that 120 out and maybe put 180? At least it's because I'm looking at what we're doing right now for January 1st, and we're into June, and that's still going on.
90 days may be a strategy to slow things down and then throw it back in. So,
actually, 180 is 6 months. If they don't get it done, if this process doesn't get it done in 6 months, it leaves the chief of police 6 months to get it done.
Yeah.
So it's really a reasonable change.
And Joel, is that the entire investigation and all possible appeals?
Well, I tell you what I was thinking. That's what I was thinking.
Okay.
That's a lot of...
Just another suggestion in the...
go by that.
In the time of this talk?
Yeah.
Where it says, and I don't know the date, where it says 120 days, and whatever the number of days it ends up to be or under this draft idea, that is, say, 120 days... from the time reported, because people will have amnesia of what that means a year from now.
That's right.
You're right.
So it's 120 days from what? So either it's from the time reported, from when they contacted, it's from whenever the process, something had to start it.
Yeah.
I agree with the 120 days. I think to lengthen it any further just makes it worse, really, in terms of the perception of what's going on or what could go on.
So you want to compress the process.
A lot of agencies.
You want to give this process enough room to get it done and get it completed. It could be a strategy to slow the process down so that it then automatically kicks over and to the chief of police, and that really negates the citizen. No, I mean, I'm just giving you the
6 months is fine.
6 months is about as fair. You can argue it's
fine,
and then 6 months each way. And I wouldn't say 6 months from the time it's reported.
Yeah.
I would say 6 months from the time that the auditor commences his investigation.
Okay, or when the auditor receives.
Yeah, well, once he receives it.
Yeah, I would echo that, I think. I mean, let's see, I would say 100, well, whatever the days are.
180 days from the time the auditor receives.
I would say from the time the complainant filed their report.
No.
That's what my suggestion is. Otherwise, the auditor may not touch this for another.
Let me tell you why. Let me just give you the alternative view on that. From the law enforcement side, we say, well, okay, look, we received it on Saturday at midnight. And it sits around in the bureaucracy for a week or two. And that can happen. I've been there. I've seen it happen.
I would hope that this auditor is not, because I think...
You got to let me finish, Greg.
...not to be a bureaucracy.
Hold on.
Greg, let me finish.
Okay.
Let me finish my idea. I'm not arguing with you. I'm just saying that paperwork can float around, as it does, and you lose precious days. From the time the auditor receives it, he ought to stamp it and says, I'm beginning my investigation. And it should be stamped right on top of his investigation when he commenced the investigation. That starts the clock. He's got 6 months to get it done.
I would, as a coming to the middle, how about it starts with the time the auditor receives the complaint?
That's what I said.
But you're saying when he starts his investigation, because the officers are going to say he sat on it for a month.
Okay. You're right. You said better than me. Yeah. I meant what you're saying.
Yeah.
That's what I just said a minute ago.
Okay. All right. So we're clear that if the time clock starts when the auditor receives the complaint, that's it. All right. Okay.
And we're saying 180 days?
180 days.
I have no problems with 180 days. Discussed. That works for everybody.
Okay. So those are some useful provisions. Thank you. Quinn, did you have your hand up? Sorry.
Apparently people are making final comments as if the process is over, so I guess I would just offer that today it sort of felt, at least from my perspective, a little bit like Groundhog Day in the movie. Yeah. Where I'm not quite exactly sure how much progress we've made, or are we repeating the same meeting over and over again. And I say that our office, while we may have political differences regarding the nature of civilian oversight, we certainly get a good bulk of the constituent feedback regarding this process, regarding what had happened with the incident, etc. I'm not so sure if we as an office and this process, or BART as an institution, are hearing the same feedback or are hearing the same thing, quite honestly, and I think that that's where we can draw the line to disagree. We went from last week of having an issue of a 5-4 vote, and the main issue was, will the BART Board of Directors have the appeal process at the end of it, right? Now, was it certainly the OCC model? No, we've made peace with that. Now, there were certainly comments that it would lead to litigation, it would lead to all sorts of things. If the BART Board of Directors were allowed to have the appeal process. We then moved to today, and Reggie put forward his hybrid model with a few more layers of the appeal process. And then we took a gigantic step back, with all due respect to Director Keller, with now creating a 2/3 rule for appeals to go through. I'm not sure what else within BART and the BART Board of Directors requires 2/3, but you will have to explain that, quite honestly, to the public and to the community, that you have made an exception. And the exception is for police misconduct. Mm-hmm. For police misconduct appeals to move forward, you have chosen a 2/3 majority rather than the normal BART protocol, which is a majority vote. We will certainly disagree with you on that. We will publicly do so as an office, because we respond to the nature of the complaints that have happened so far. So I think we just want to go on the record with that. I will certainly go back to my boss as well as Senator Yee to present. If you are comfortable moving forward with the 2/3, you will have to explain it, because it feels like we had some progress regarding some sense of independence outside of the normal BART institution. And I think, as Reggie pointed out earlier, this is an event-driven process. This is not a benevolent process. This was not because we decided to do this proactively. I wouldn't be sitting here, nor would you. So our concerns certainly are, we got to a point where it seemed like there was some agreement about, at the end of the day, the community's going to want to know that it gets outside of the general manager and the police chief. That was the feedback from the 15th. It was the feedback at the 2nd. It's the feedback in newspapers. Now we got there, and now we're setting, not we, collectively, you're setting then the bar unnaturally high that doesn't exist in any other process within BART. I think that should be duly noted. So as an institution, if we're still digging in, or you're still digging in regarding not really wanting to let go of a certain process, or just trusting the fact that you can have it go to the BART Board of Directors, if you think that makes it political, welcome to the last 6 months. This event, as I'm sure all of you are aware, has rippled throughout the entire BART institution. The idea of restoring trust is a long process. The trial has yet to even begin. And if you don't think that will externally change how people view BART or interact with BART officers, I actually think, and I would certainly argue from our perspective, that it would benefit BART officers in the big picture to be able to put forward and say, we actually support independent oversight. That message coming from the BART unions, coming from BART as an institution, and not resisting it, would totally change the flavor of this, rather than continually being put on the PR defensive when people keep saying what you're doing is not enough. Proactively join hands and say, listen, it makes us all uncomfortable, but we're going to move forward with something that's strongly independent. But unfortunately, that doesn't seem like that's going to happen. So I would certainly offer a couple of things. As one, I look forward to the next community meeting. We will be public about our concerns. We are not here to fight the process. We're not here to fight the final outcome. We certainly want an outcome that matches the feedback that we get from constituents that call our office. Quite honestly, that's what our goal here is. We're not here to politically defeat anything. We're not here to take on the unions. We're not here to take on management. We're not here to take on the institution. We want to make sure that the feedback that we get is communicated to you. And because these meetings are a little challenging from 10 to 1 and then on a Monday, right, we have taken that role of trying to, you know, that responsibility for that process. But I do think that there needs, if this is today's final proposal of moving forward, set a date for the community forum, listen to the feedback, and then we can go from that step on, because it doesn't feel final, but it feels like from people's comments today that this process suddenly has felt final with a last sort of, you know, proposal by Director Keller for the 2/3 that all of a sudden we've now had consensus on the board with, without necessarily a lot of, as I look around the room, public participation or attendance. So I just want to point that out.
Can I ask you a question, Quentin? Okay. Everything you've heard today, now take the 2/3 away. Everything you heard today that we want to put forward, is that workable based on the conversations you've been having with your constituents? Because I get the calls too. So
I mean, having said that, you know, I'd be the last one to tell you that it's gonna address every last, mm-hmm. you know, concern constituent wise. Mm-hmm. But I think given the model that's been chosen, the auditor model. I thought version 3 last week was as simplified as possible. Mm-hmm. At the end, it just simply went to the BARC board. I understand where Reggie's coming from of trying to add a couple different layers. I mean, as Don pointed out, I'm not sure if all those layers are necessary. You can remove the chief of police. You can kind of remove, because people need to feel it's independent. It should never refer back to the institution. I mean, when you think about independent oversight, right, it should never remain an internal process. So I think to some extent, last week's version 3 is probably the best option. From our perspective of sort of what's on the table or what seems like folks around this committee are going to be feasibly want to do. But then I think that Reggie's option, the 2/3 thing, I think obviously is, from our perspective, deal breaker. Absolutely. Absolute deal breaker.
So then why don't we have further discussion around the 2/3? Because it sounds like we might have something to move forward with. And I mentioned to you, I didn't like it, but it was little because it was something that the BARC board might go for. It sounded like, from what Jesse had to say, the police were looking for something like that. But I guess I shouldn't be looking from board or police or anything internal. I should be looking at what would people externally be expecting from a civilian oversight committee and our role and responsibility in it. And Quentin is right. I mean, there are very few things within the organization. I mean, we do have votes that require 2/3 votes, but not a lot.
And what are they?
Usually surrounding policy changes, fare increases.
And sole source.
Sole source contracts.
Issues that rise to the level of serious policy decisions.
And
it's not an uncommon feature of the BART system, and all due respect to Quentin. It is done on those matters that involve serious consequences. Taking away a person's property right to a job is a serious consequence. It is equivalent, in my mind, to a fare increase or to a sole source contract. These employees, these peace officers, have a property right to that position. And to take that away on a simple majority, in my mind, is something that is not acceptable. And let me throw your boss's words back to you. He said yesterday, after the governor said that he wasn't going to extend the lending power, he said he would not be bullied by the governor. I don't intend to be bullied by the legislature in this issue, because I think it's important that all of the constituencies that are represented in this district have a fair shake in this discussion. Look, you've mentioned that I was the one who brought forth the 2/3 requirement, and I acknowledge that. And I think you're feeling that somehow I'm trying to interfere with this process. I've gone an awfully longer way than I thought I would have 6 months ago in trying to find an agreement of how we can move forward to consider all of the interests that are represented not only at this table but throughout the district. I've read the editorials in the San Francisco Chronicle. They're not flattering to that system. They're not flattering to the process of discipline in the San Francisco Police Department. So while you come from a constituency and your member comes from a constituency that accepts and feels that that's an appropriate way to deal with police oversight, I don't question that. But it sure feels to me like the legislature is trying to impose something upon this district that may not represent all of the interests of everyone who has an interest in this district. I put forward a compromise. If the only thing that you're really taking a strong position on is a two-thirds vote, we've come a long way, because I think 6 months ago our disagreements would have been much wider and the difference in our point of view would have been much different. To your question, we can talk some more, and maybe there's another way, because it would be very helpful if we came out of this with agreement. But this director will not be bullied by the legislature into voting just because one member out of 120 feels a certain way.
Just to clarify for the record, I've participated in these meetings. I have never bullied. I'm not waving a proposal from the OCC model to now the auditor model. I'm simply presenting our members' point of view and our constituents. If you find that to be bullying, my apologies to you personally. But in all honesty, I have spent hours in these meetings participating, listening, and watching as an outside observer. I go back and report, and I hear what happens from our constituents. I'm sorry if you have a difference of opinion, but I have not bullied, nor has our member bullied any one of you in this process. We have participated, as is our right, representing the district that we represent in AD 13. So just want to clarify as far as the comments regarding bullying. We share a difference of opinion about what oversight is. I welcome you, and I, you know, good luck in presenting this back to the community as independent oversight. We're not, as I mentioned to you before, we are not going to fight this, we're not going to go out of this way, but we share a difference of opinion regarding the policy you are trying to enact. Having said that, we will express that. We are not expressing that in a bullying fashion. I've been trying to participate in this process to assist what I see on the outside. When you mentioned the first conversation today, what was around for the Reverend mentioned, bad PR. I think we all know what bad PR is. It's been 6 months of bad PR. What we're trying to do is transition that to a proactive outcome where everyone around this room doesn't have to deal with those bad PR questions. And bad PR, not simply because someone writes something bad, but of bad decisions that lead to bad PR. That's where bad PR comes from. So I think I just want to clarify that, but I just want to take a little issue with the bullying comment as far as I'm here participating. I don't speak except once a meeting at the end when I'm asked for my opinion and from our office, and I get it. So that's sort of the role that I've taken on here. So just want to clarify that. That'll be my last statement of the day, but, you know.
I think the property right issue is unique to the populace, because they don't understand that. And oftentimes I've heard folks express that, why do they get it? But that's where we are in California, in the state of law. So we do have a property right in law enforcement. And so I will simply say that if we're that close to a consensus on this board, I would recommend strongly that we move forward with the consensus that we have, and let's hear from the public. Because I think we're there. You know, and this is how we're making sausage here. So let's keep it going. And I think Director Keller's offering is the best we have that we're all agreeing with. We've had all constituents comment on it. Let's try it. And I think the property right argument is a solid one. I mean, this is major. This is their livelihood. This is their career. This is their job. Their job is a property right, whereas if you're a physician at Kaiser Hospital, your job is not a property right. And the public has to understand that.
That's correct.
And so this is where we are with the law in California. This is not law enforcement doing it for himself. This is the citizens of the state of California giving that right to law enforcement, firemen, and correctional officers. Yeah.
Just to be clear, the board can initiate. Yeah, go ahead.
Don't get me started on that again, please. I just, once again, I want to appreciate the work that you've done. I want to appreciate the